When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Survivor specialists John and not McKenna this week are here with you. Instead, I am joined by a very special guest. You might not hear him every week, but you see his handiwork every single week. It's the thumbnails for our videos on YouTube. It's the backgrounds for our videos on YouTube. I am joined by Austin Garso. Austin, so lovely to have you here on this week's episode of The Rewind.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's interesting to be on this side of the camera for once, and I've been having a blast doing all of the thumbnails since the revamp of the podcast, so it's cool to see, you know, myself on the screen with my background right behind me. So I'm excited.
And I'm very excited to have you because we have some very interesting things to talk about this week on The Rewind. We had another very, for me, season 47 just keeps delivering. How are you feeling about 47 so far?
Overall, I'm really liking this season. I know this last episode has some differing opinions. But overall, I think the season's been really good. The characters are very enjoyable. And I feel like almost every single episode has just been like insane and something crazy happened. So definitely fun to watch. One of my favorite New Era seasons so far, I would say. I don't know if it's tops the charts, but it's definitely up there. I definitely like how, I just like how they are making some changes finally. Here I was praising them last week, and then certain things happened this episode that made me a little upset. But we'll get to that. Overall, yeah. Liking the season, though.
Yeah, good. And I agree. I think, like, there are those things, like, casting in the New Era at this point seems to be down pat. They seem to be doing really well with that. We were praising, you know, hey, no Mergatory last week. Like, yes, they're calling it a Mergatory, and Blake kind of broke that down on Digging Deeper last week, but that's probably just, like, a money thing, and you make the merge, you make a little bit more money, so it's probably why they're calling it not the merge at that point.
Yeah.
But it's weird when we go from like this vote with 13 people and it was like a regular merge vote, and then we get this like split tribal that we get this week, and I mean that's what we're gonna have to dig into now, right? Like this episode of 47, how did you feel about it? Like, because you mentioned it's been a bit divisive, I'm sure everyone in the Survivor community has their own opinions on whether they like this episode, they dislike this episode, they kind of like this episode, but they hated parts of this episode. Where do you fall on that spectrum of episode 7 of Survivor 47?
For me, it's definitely the latter. Like, I liked parts of it, and then there were parts that I didn't like as much. Overall, not happy with the split tribal twist. Like I said, I was just praising them the week before for finally doing like the not traditional mergatory, and we get like an actual traditional merge boot for the first time since the New Era. And then we get this split tribal where like not only it's not even like they've been doing where you have two tribals and both groups go to tribal. Now you have a situation where literally one whole group of people is immune, and then one person is immune. Like the fact that only five people are eligible to get votes, like theoretically going in, is terrible. And then you throw in the advantage that Sol finds later on. Who's not going to pick safety without power there if they're in a bad situation? So then essentially it's down to four people that are eligible to be voted out. It just not by far my favorite thing in the world.
No, it's kind of one of those things where I think Will really put it well on the podcast this week, where he stated it kind of feels like production is trying to manufacture these big moments. And I think that is where a lot of people are falling on this. We're sick and tired of the twists. We're sick and tired of like not just letting the players play. But at the same time, we're having this emotional response to this episode. I know me personally, I kind of enjoyed this episode. The production got me. They got me with it. I mean, there's the split and I'm like kind of groaning of the split. And then it's like only one of you is going. I'm like, okay, that's a little better than like losing two of these great characters at the same time in this episode. And there's been a lot of discussion on the internet as to, does this mean we have a double boot further on? Or it seems like the finale is a week later. So is there an extra episode this year? I guess we'll just have to wait and find out how that's going to play out. But then there's the additional like production meddling of it all, which we're going to get into a lot later on. It leaves that sour taste in your mouth. You feel really bad for Tiana, especially as she's like pouring her heart out about how much she wants to make the merge and everything like that. And it's like, hey, welcome to your pre-merge tribal council, where you've just gone back to your original tribe and the math was there. I think it was like a 0.8% that it would break out this way. So this shouldn't have happened. Somehow it did. But it still felt entertaining. And
yeah,
I think that's kind of important. I really want the preservation of the sanctity of the game. I want the players to determine what's going on with the game. It's been one of the biggest complaints about the new era.
Yeah.
But at least if production's meddling, at least it's not something like the Hourglass, which was just like, okay, this is like straight up lying to the contestants, or like the Do or Die. Yeah. Remember that? That was one of the worst twists we've ever had introduced in Survivor. And
I genuinely kind of forget about that one a lot. And I think it's just because I black it out because of how awful it was.
Exactly. So because of that, like I can feel a little bit better about this twist because it's not the worst twist production has thrown at us in the new era.
Yeah.
But that being said, at least this is one that gives us that bit of entertainment, that bit of little bit of shine. It's fun watching these people scramble. And we learned a little bit about the mechanics of this advantage since the episode aired. Rachel did clarify that she had the option of choosing either the block of vote or the safety without power up until the moment she read the advantage at Tribal Council. Okay. So, and she did have a conversation with Tiana about it after she found it in her bag like 20 minutes beforehand, but didn't find it early enough in order to actually use it and
come up with a plan.
Exactly. So there are these little things that we found out about it afterwards, about the mechanics of it all, that makes it feel a little bit better, but at the same time, like, does put that little bit of sour taste in there. I know like X was going wild this week with people just like complaining about it, but overall, and, like, I'm still enjoying the season, and that's what I care about.
The parts of the episodes that I did like are very much results driven, as much as I love Tiana and was very sad for her. Because obviously as a fan and someone who would eventually like to get on the show someday, I obviously am heartbroken for her. But I am 100% a Rachel stan. So the fact that this twist and this advantage came into play and like was able to essentially save her from impending doom of being tribe swapped, or like, or swap screwed, essentially, not swap screwed, but like, you know, ending up in a tribal where she's the only person that wasn't on the original tribe with the rest of the other members. So I'm happy about that at the very least.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and it's really hard to tell, and it's not really fair to Tiana to say, oh, well, Rachel kind of felt like she was delivering a little bit more, because it's an edited show, right? We get that from the edited show. So yeah, she's doing it more because production's like, oh yeah, Tiana kind of goes here, so you can't go too much into her and show what's going on exactly. Mm-hmm. But let's take this like concept of swap screw and go into our outwit moment for the week, which is something that Caroline said at Tribal Council. This idea of like, it was the conversation when they were talking about big moves, and it was kind of like the only good thing to come out of that first half of the Tribal Council before Rachel ups and leaves, where Caroline's like, yeah, I mean, big moves are good, but if they're correct, and mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you make the easy vote and it's the correct move, or sometimes you make the big move and it's the wrong move. So it's this kind of this idea of like, is the easy vote the right vote? And in preparing for the podcast, we were kind of talking about it, and it really came down to these like swap screw situations. I mean, that's the biggest point. And it feels weird talking about the post merge and talking about being swap screwed, but again, that's kind of where we're at with this tribe split that we get in the new era. This is a tribe swap. Phil is very adamant. This is a tribe swap. Don't call it a merge. It's a tribe swap. It wasn't even a tribe swap. It was kind of just like, here, Tuku, have Rachel. So I think I want to go to one that I think there was an easy vote, and it's a little more complicated because of the situation into the game. It's one that we talk about a lot. I want to talk about the Amber vote in All-Stars, because this is a situation where, of course, pregame relationships really played into how this vote went, with Rob going to Lex and be like, yo, protect her, keep her around, we'll be good. Then obviously, hindsight's 2020. We know this bites Lex in the butt right away, as soon as the next vote. Amber was very much the easy vote in this situation. She is the only person from her original tribe who goes over to this tribe. This is that infamous All-Star swap where Amber is literally the only person who changes tribes. The easy vote is Amber. And Lex, instead, votes out Ethan. Right? This is the Ethan vote, right?
No, Jerry vote.
The Jerry vote. And instead, like, of having this situation that Lex has been building up this entire time, he goes with Rob, who is someone he trusts outside the game. And he's not thinking in-game what the benefits are to him. I think that this easy vote of Amber is so straightforward. It's just very clear. Like, this is the vote you're supposed to do. This is a time before advantages. You're not even worried of Amber pulling out a hidden immunity idol and it somehow falling back on you in this situation. But where do you land on this, Austin? Like, was obviously, like, taking out the confirmation bias of we know how Rob responds afterwards to Lex.
Mm-hmm.
In the situation where Lex was in All-Stars going, or just this entire tribe going into, you know, just after the swap, going into a merge, was it correct to save Amber here?
I mean, like you said earlier, hindsight is 2020. So obviously it's not, looking back. But like, even in the moment, like, why would you, people are like trying to come up with reasons to keep Amber. But like, what it all boils down to for me is the fact that like, they're very much like, they're back basically in a relationship at this point, and everybody knows it. That's an automatic pair. Why is that not ringing alarm bells and being like, oh, we're worried about Rob's going to hold a grudge after the fact. Why are you worried about Rob holding a grudge? That's exactly what you want. You want people that are going to be like not adaptable and not open and stuff. Like, that's what you think of when you think of Survivor, you know? If Rob is going to get all butthurt, then let him get butthurt. Because now you're just giving him ammo and leaving him an ally in the game who's always going to vote the same way that he is. And it just makes it that much easier for him to turn on you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those things. It's really interesting because the difficult thing with All-Stars, and why I think All-Stars is kind of an interesting season. I know, like, Phil's not high on All-Stars. But, and I know some other, I know a lot, I'm not personally high on All-Stars, but there are some interesting aspects of All-Stars, and that is it, with it being the first returning season of Survivor, it kind of changed the way the games played in these situations and set the blueprint for how we see games played now with returning players. And there's this big thought process, and I think we kind of see it a little bit more in the new era too, where it's this idea of, are you playing Survivor to make friends, or are you playing Survivor to win a game? And that was very much the difference I think Rob took into that situation in All-Stars than a lot of the other players in All-Stars, where they had friends they were playing a game with, but Rob was willing to go all the way to win the game, which is why this evaluation from Lex of, I have this very tight friendship with Rob, led him to making this wrong decision when there is this such an easy vote to go after here. It's pretty much the same situation as what we saw in 47, right? Like, it's one pre-merge tribe with an outsider coming in. It's an easy situation. Yeah. Based on everything that happened in this episode, it's pretty abundantly clear Rachel was going no matter what this episode. I know one of Phil, Blake, and Will said that they thought Tiana was going no matter what. And there's a potential that we just didn't get any of that in the edit to make it look like Saul was actually saving Rachel. And that there it was kind of this more like the swap screen situation. And I can't confirm or deny that because I don't have evidence to the contrary. Like, I don't have evidence to prove that that was the case, that Tiana was in fact going to go. But based on the edit that we're shown, Rachel was going no matter what. It very clearly said that, even just based on the tribal council that was happening before Rachel left, it seemed pretty cut or dry that Rachel was the one going.
One thing I would have been interested to see happen is if, like, maybe Rachel had, you know, because she had that conversation with Gabe about potentially go voting for Caroline. Mm-hmm. And then you had the conversation with Caroline and Tiana, I believe it was, about getting rid of Gabe.
Right.
Well, what would have happened if Rachel had gone back to Caroline and was like, oh, Gabe's putting your name out there as an option. Like, is that, you know, is that the fuel and, you know, the jump start that Caroline needs to be like, oh, maybe we do need to go Gabe here.
Yeah. Or maybe it was, maybe Gabe just knew that Caroline was the name to throw out. And that's kind of the hard part of dissecting this exact the strategy session leading up to this tribal council, because I don't think Gabe could say Tiana's name there. Because I think there is concern that if Rachel hears Tiana's name, goes back to Tiana, Tiana does react the way you would expect her to react. And that is like then trying to push the vote on Gabe. And I think there might have been concerns about that. I think he felt Caroline is level-headed enough to not react that way.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the reason why Caroline was the thing. The interesting thing I found, and I think I might be going crazy because I swear I heard this in this episode, but no one seems to be mentioning it on any of these podcasts. When Tiana approaches Rachel with the plan of getting out Gabe, she's like, yeah, Kyle's our third. Kyle is like locked in. He's willing to do it. And then when Gabe talks about voting out Caroline, he also says Kyle is the third. That happened, right? I'm not imagining this. That did, in fact, happen on this episode, right?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'd have to watch it back and, in fact, check that. But, I mean, it seems like a logical thing to be said, considering they're trying to pitch Rachel this plan, and they obviously need to, you know, say who else is in on it in order to make it, like, believable.
Yeah, and I think Gabe's trying to obscure his relationships with Sue and Caroline at this point. Mm-hmm. Because there's already talk about, like, Tuku being very strong together. But, okay, what's going on with, within Tuku, there has to be stronger relationships, so maybe that's it. But I'm just surprised we didn't get any conversation of Rachel being like, hey, you both said that Kyle was your third. Like, where's the conversation with Kyle confirming what's actually going on?
Yeah.
That's all I want. So what do you have? What easy vote do you have? And was it the right or wrong vote in that situation?
Yeah. So when we were playing the podcast, I don't know what made me think of it, but my mind immediately went to the Aubrey boot from Edge of Extinction. So in this episode, this is right after the tribe swap, I believe. And Wendy is the only person from the original blue tribe. And we have Eric, Gavin, Victoria, and Aubrey. In this instance, I think the easy boot being Wendy was not the right move. And I believe they made the right move in this situation. But going in, obviously, Wendy is seen as the easy boot because just the episode prior, she let the chickens go, which obviously was a big thing of contention. But yeah, I mean, then there's even outside factors that the players didn't know about at the time. But Aubrey had just found an idol that episode. And, or no, she found the extra vote that episode.
She was given the extra vote from the Edge of Extinction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And had an idol. So, like, I don't know. The theme is hindsight is 2020, but like, you looking back and watching it, you're like, oh my God, that's definitely the right decision, because like, she had all these tricks up her sleeve, and and she was the only returning player in that group.
Yeah.
And was obviously a big threat. So I think they definitely made the right move in that situation.
I agree. And I think there's a lot of different things that play into why this is the right move here. Yes, we again had like that confirmation bias. We know she has all of these tricks in her pocket and everything like that. But this is also Aubrey Bracco on her third return, right? And her first two, or like her first game was Ko Rong, where people were like, she should have won. Not people on this podcast, but people out in the survivor community are like, yeah, you know, Aubrey should have won that season. And then Game Changers, like she still goes far into the game in that season as well. So it's understandable. There's this threat associated with Aubrey. We already saw that like the original comment was like, oh, we don't really want these returning players around. And a lot of that comes down to the fact that up until Edge of Extinction, every season with a returning player had returning players at Final Tribal Council. So that's one of those things where it's like, okay, let's not be that season. Let's not be the ones foolish enough to take these returning players to the end. Sure, there's like varying results as to whether or not that returning player ends up winning in the end. More times than not, they do, though. So it makes sense. And I think there is a lot more that goes into this one. I think at first glance, Wendy is a very easy vote here. She's a bit of an erratic player. She's playing emotionally. She's the only mana on this new tribe. And there's this little thing that I think really plays into it here. And that is the fact that she's the easy vote makes it very easy to blindside Aubrey in this situation. Because Aubrey should never expect it, because there's an easy vote right there. But you don't have to vote out Wendy if you're worried about her connections to the old Mana tribe, because the rest of that tribe is just the Lesu tribe now. So if Lesu loses, they're already voting out their own numbers. And I mean, again, hindsight's 2020. It's the theme of this podcast, apparently. That tribe did not do well.
No.
So just looking at that aspect of it, there's so many parts of this, but getting out this bigger threat in this situation instead of this obvious person who is kind of at the bottom. And there was another point in this episode that I thought was really interesting. It was when Caroline and Tiana were talking, and Tiana's like trying to pitch, hey, let's go to Gabe, or let's vote out Gabe to Caroline. And Caroline's rebuttal is, well, Rachel's this very scary social player. Like, all of us really like her. That means she's good at this game. And I think she's this glue pulling, like, keeping the Goddess together. And we as an audience have the dramatic irony of knowing Rachel's kind of on the bottom of Goddess. Like, yeah, it kind of seems like Andy with like their willingness to throw him out at the last vote. But look at the situations. Rachel was also macking on food there. So you're not going to say, let's get rid of Rachel. You're just like, okay, we can get rid of Andy. And plus, Andy had that blow up in the first episode. Like, everyone's kind of like, okay, we can get rid of Andy, right? So it's interesting to see how, like, God is kind of doing that. But it's also interesting to see that this threat of that social player is really what scares people. And in Edge of Extinction, I don't think Wendy was that threat of a social player. And I don't really think Aubrey's that threat of a social player either, but she's that threat of a strategic player that makes it so that when you have the opportunity to take a shot, you should.
Yeah. But, like, I think even though, like, you say she's not, like, the best, you know, social threat, but still sitting at a final tribal for someone, a returning player on their third try. I mean, Aubrey just in general is a very likable person. Mm. So as long as she had some strategy to back up that, I think, you know, she definitely a threat. And I think they made the right move of taking her out, because I wouldn't want to sit at the end with Aubrey, especially, like I said, on her third attempt, you know?
No, I absolutely agree. It's just so interesting. There are so many examples of this, like, idea of an easy vote and whether or not it's the right move. And no matter who you talk to in the Survivor community, you are always going to get opposing views on it. Everyone's going to have their own exact take on it. So that's what made this topic so interesting to discuss today. It's just, like, there are so many different, like, nuances to what makes a move correct. And can we determine a correct move in the moment, or do we need that confirmation bias to tell us it was correct afterwards? But moving on to our outplay moment, we had a return of something that we haven't seen in a while on Survivor this week, and that is an advantage hidden at a reward challenge. I love this thought process. I love everything about this. It is kind of one of these fun things that it's kind of gone away in the new era, because I mean, our advantages or our rewards have all been very similar, and they've been, you know, here's the sanctuary and here's camp with things, and you're, like, kind of off there with this group of people. So it was nice when there's doing the pan of the area and you see that little scroll in that pot. You're like, yes, let's do it, because this is fun. And it gave us this moment of, like, Andy kind of looking around trying to find it and being called out by Sierra, and then Saul rolling over, and it's like, oh, that's there. I now need to shove this in my underwear. So, Austin, what have you got for us? What moment of finding an advantage at a reward are you wanting to talk about?
Yeah, I first just want to kick off with, like, rewatching these clips that we chose and moments, like, really makes me miss the good old-fashioned, like, Survivor rewards. I'm just, like, so over the sanctuary, and, like, you can't tell me there's not other places in Fiji that they can go to do different things and see different sites and all that stuff, but they just, whether it's money or whatever the reason is, have just gotten really lazy and boring with the rewards. That being said, we are going to Worlds Apart for the Zipline Pizza reward.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to go ziplining? That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's such a cool reward to do. And we're just getting boring rewards now. So in this reward, this is right after Joe has just won his second individual challenge, and then later moves on to win his third individual challenge, second individual immunity, which also kind of has, like, a relating point back to this episode of 47, because Kyle has just won his second individual immunity.
He gets a little bit of asterisk there, though, because, like, he can
get
Anyways, continue.
So we get into this reward, and Joe just happens to notice that there is a little scroll in Mama C's soda. And we get this really interesting moment where he's like, he finishes his soda and he's like, oh, I wish I had more soda. So Carolyn gives it to him, and he tries to, like, get this whole scroll in his mouth and, like, practically chokes on it. And then Tyler sees him, like, taking it out of his mouth. And then it's just so funny, because probably just, like, a weird editing trick or something. But, like, later on in the reward, we see them, like, cracking open like new bottles of soda after he just like was like, oh, I wish I had more soda, and Carolyn gives him the rest of his. So just like, it was kind of funny. And yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
This scene's so funny, and I think production actually does a really good way of setting this up, where it gives you just the soda that has the scroll in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, I don't know how they like put this scroll into this bottle and like still had it, you know, pop like all the other ones and everything like that when you opened it. Maybe they opened all the bottles beforehand so you didn't notice, but it's in the whatever the clear soda is. But it's the fact that I am differentiating that there is a clear soda and non-clear sodas. Production stock these with like different types of sodas so that people could pass them around and that people could be like, oh, I really want to try that one. Like, let me give that a try. And you see Joe sitting across from Carolyn and she's taking this and you can just barely make out this scroll at the bottom of the bottle. Honestly, if you are drinking out of that bottle, unless that's hitting your face, you're probably not noticing it at all. Just because of there is a label, like a nondescript label on the bottle as well. So it would kind of obscure it. And I kind of want to, I wish there was like a little bit more to this reward we could have seen, because I'm sure it was, but the fact that Joe specifically is like, oh, I wish I had more soda. And Carolyn's just like, yeah, here, have fine. Like, how do you get to that point? You know, where is that? Because like you said, there was another bottle that they seemed to be opening afterwards. Tyler makes this hilarious comment about, oh man, I really wish I tried that one that you had though, Joe. and Joe's like, oh, you wouldn't have liked it. It was flat. Don't worry about it. It's just, it's humorous. It's funny. And it kind of shows how aware you had to be at these rewards. It feels like Survivor's moved away from this awareness you need, which is why it's really interesting seeing Andy look for it, because this isn't something that we're seeing so much in the new era. And maybe it was just a timing thing. Obviously, the fact that this is a split tribal council, and the last time in the new era, we did have this split tribal council where one didn't go. We did have the advantage that Heidi found in 44, but that was a completely different scenario where they were just told, yeah, go find a key and then unlock the birdcage and there's this advantage for you. And it was this mad scramble instead of like it being hidden at the reward. There was a possibility nobody was finding this. And that is one thing that I think we really have to note with these advantages in Survivor sometimes is for us, the audience, it seems obvious this scroll is here. We're getting an edited version of the show where it can be color adjusted so that it shows that contrast a lot more. I guarantee you it looks a lot more like whatever plant is in that pot when you're just like casually glancing at it, unless you're like intently looking straight at it. But yeah, I think this example here is really funny, because I think this is one of the more ingenious ways they've hidden it. We've seen, you know, they're hidden in napkins and it's just kind of whoever happens to like pull their napkin up and it falls in their lap or whatever. But hiding in a soda, I mean, it's one of those places that I would have never checked. But alas, here it is. So that's one of those things that you need to check when you go on Survivor is, when Jeff makes a mention that there's soda, maybe you need to pay attention to those sodas. But I want to take it to, I think, one of my favorite moments with these advantage clues hidden at rewards. And that's Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. And it's the spaghetti reward. It's one of those great moments. It has the family style. You know, everyone goes in one at a time. You get to eat some of this spaghetti. And on the plate is this clue to the location of the idol. And you see Cole go in there first. And he, you know, has some of his food. And then he notices the clue. And he puts a napkin over top of the plate. And puts the spaghetti on top of the napkin. Because that is a totally normal way of presenting spaghetti to anyone. And then Ryan comes in. He finds it. Chrissy comes in first, finds it. Ryan's coming in after her. Ryan finds it. Then Ryan's like, hey, you know what would be a smarter thing to do? Get rid of the plate. Throws the plate into the jungle. Because that is a smarter thing than putting a napkin over it. And this is kind of that cool thing. And this is something that we've seen while we were talking about like this theme. It's like, man, I can think of so many examples from Australian Survivor, because Australian Survivor does this a lot. And it's just something that's been missing in American Survivor for a while. But this, I love this one, because there's this interesting tension of who gets to go first and who gets to go last, and what are the benefits to both, right? Like, if you go first, if you're lucky, you find it right away, but you don't get the opportunity to the last person to turn the entire place upside down looking for it. So what do you think? How do you feel about these type of advantages and rewards?
I mean, I love these types of rewards. Like you said, we see a lot of them in Australian Survivor, and I'm obviously a big fan of that as well. I found it really interesting because, like, so Devin went first, and then JP went second, and there were, like, you could see there were a couple letters poking out on that plate, and I'm sitting here, like, rewatching this clip, and I was like, how did JP not see that?
Yeah.
And then Cole came in third, and he's the one, obviously, that found it first. But yeah, I found it really interesting. And then Ryan and Chrissy are, like, whispering about it, and then all chaos ensues when they get back to camp, and there's just mad dash for the flag to find the idol. Yeah, I think it rewards like this create, like, really cool moments like that.
And I think what I really appreciate about this, these older versions, is they are clues to the locations of advantages. Rather than what, like, Saul just technically found the advantage. And now, granted, he has to give the advantage to someone else, so I think it's kind of okay in this situation. But if this was an advantage that Saul just got to keep for himself, I really want this to be a clue. And part of that's just because I kind of miss the scavenger hunt for clues. And we've been, like you said earlier on in the podcast, like, there seems to be production has listened to our feedback, and we seem to be going back to that. We saw that with, like, the box idols and everything early on in the season, right? This idea of, like, the scavenger hunt is kind of back in Survivor. So maybe fingers crossed, we get to that point where we get more of these, like, clues hidden at rewards, and people get to go off. But I think part of the reason why we've also lost that is because we just don't have, like, dedicated reward challenges anymore too. The new era is just not treating us well when it comes to rewards. I'm sorry to say it, but hopefully we can get them, because I want scrambles. I want mad dashes. And more importantly, I want multiple people finding these clues so that they have to rush against each other to find them. Because right now we have one advantage in the entire game right now, and it's just Sue's idol. So something's got to be coming down the line.
Yeah. But also, like, one of the reasons why I'm enjoying 47, because it feels like there hasn't been a whole lot of chaos when it comes to advantages.
I mean, we've only seen, what? I mean, we saw the amulet get played, but that was kind of more of a just let's get rid of it type of thing. We just saw Rome.
I mean, don't get me wrong, a steal a vote on a tribe of five is pretty atrocious from production standpoint, but
yeah, it is. It's one of the issues with small tribes. Is advantages make small tribes, like, ooh. But as we saw this weekend, like, that takes us into our next point, in fact, because we have to address the elephant in the room, and that is Tiana kind of gets screwed this episode. Like, first off, like, it seemed like Rachel was the one getting screwed, because Rachel is, hey, you've made the merge, but hey, here's Tuku and you at Tribal Council. Instead, Rachel gets saved by probably one of the most obvious plays in Survivor of, hey, let's save the odd person out and just let them leave Tribal Council and see what happens. Especially when you're watching everything, like, great information gathering to see exactly how things break out after Rachel leaves that Tribal Council. Let her use the safety of that power, get out of there. And that leaves Tiana, who was at a point where, based on the edit, we had already seen it, she kind of dug her own grave at this point with her own Tukus. I think the Tukus were always really willing to kind of throw her under the bus here. I think there's potential, if Gata wasn't willing to throw Andy, then there's potential. I think Tiana ended up being that second vote last week instead.
Yeah. I mean, we essentially got Tuku's second pre-merge tribal.
Well, that's really what it came down to, right? Like, and you know what? Tiana's kind of screwed by the production aspect of it here. But I mean, we can't acknowledge the fact that like her game did lead her to this position where she was the easy choice for the rest of these Tukus. After like TK and everything, she kind of hitched her wagon to the boys early on, which made it like Sue and Caroline weren't as close with her. I think the big issue is just like Gabe kind of has this really close connection with Caroline and Sue that Tiana just wasn't privy to of how close that was. And it made it seem like she's kind of on the outs. And like, we had these conversations about like the Women's Alliance and stuff this week. I don't know if that's going to happen after a woman goes home this week, but I mean, we'll see how things play out moving forward. But in the end, Tiana is just at the point where it's like, okay, Kyle's safe because he won immunity because he came third in this challenge. Which again, fine. That's fine. I think if Kyle's not safe, maybe there's more conversation in this tribal council. But instead, Tiana just becomes this obvious choice. It's going to be interesting watching next week to see how everyone responded to the way Tuku did to Rachel leaving. Because I think Tuku really had to kind of play their hands up here and really show who they were valuing. And Tiana made some good points of like, we can't go and just like vote out Rachel and like show that we're just this united Tuku, despite the fact that it's the easy vote and it might be the easy thing to do. But this isn't the only time we've seen people kind of like screwed by production twists. Because, yeah, we have the people who get swap screwed, right? Like, we have people who are, you know, here's a random rock. You're on the wrong side. Sorry, Rachel. Like, you're in a bad spot. Luckily, you get out of it. But we've kind of seen a couple of instances where production's introduced a twist for some reason. And it just feels really bad for the player who gets voted out. And I want to take it to Cook Islands for the first one. And, I mean, it's... Sorry, Jenny Guzon Bay, you were the victim of probably one of the worst twists in Survivor history, the bottle twist, the infamous bottle twist from Survivor Cook Islands. And this is Rero loses the immunity challenge, and they're like, oh, by the way, here's this bottle. You can't open it until you get to Tribal Council. They go through it all. They vote out Rebecca and then are told to open the bottle. Parvati opens it. And it says, hey, so you just voted out one of your tribe members. Now do it again. And as Parvati says, that's not fun. And it's not it's not very fair. It does like kind of show the pecking order because there isn't much conversation after that moment as to who's going or anything. Like, we don't have a live tribal council. Again, that was also a point in Survivor where you couldn't just like get up and whisper to each other to figure out what was going on, right? Like, at least we got the live tribal aspect of this. Despite the fact that it was like, hey, we're just sticking together, right? Like, we're doing this as we planned. But I feel so bad for Jenny because I don't know why there's all of a sudden this thing that's just like, vote out a second person. Like, just do it. It feels like the worst icky. Possible. Sorry?
I said it feels icky.
It does feel icky. There's no real better way to describe it, right? Where it's like, Phil talked about this on 45 after Caleb uses the shot in the dark. And there's like a 24-hour turnaround before the split tribal council in that one. So Caleb doesn't even have, and Caleb puts in work to kind of like get his standing up better in the tribe, but doesn't end up on the tribe like in that split that would benefit him. When there's no opportunity for conversation after a tribal council, it just like, it gets to a point where you're just really concerned. And like, the players have to make a split second decision that they think is correct. And we see how unified everyone is in that vote. So like, they were prepared for it already. So they clearly had a pecking order, but it doesn't feel fair to Jenny, who doesn't get an opportunity to even think there's an opportunity for her to go home. Yeah. And like, that's what's so icky about this bottle twist is that it just completely caught the entire Rero tribe off guard. And there was one person there who didn't even think they had to defend themselves because they already were going to tribal council to vote someone else out. That was a guaranteed going home.
Mm-hmm. And like, when I was rewatching this segment of the episode, There's actually like a foreshadowing confessional from Adam, actually. He mentioned something about wanting Jenny out next after Rebecca, mm-hmm. which is just insane because, you know, then you realize why that was put in the episode after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, editors love doing that to us, right? At least in the new era, we get like two episodes beforehand where things are.
Yeah.
Right? Where we had that Tiana at the Survivor Social Hour kind of hinting at the fact that, yeah, Tiana's kind of screwed in this situation here. But back then, it was the same episode because all of a sudden they opened a bottle and had to vote someone else out.
Yeah.
All right. What? Which player do you think is like the most screwed over by a production twist that just wasn't fair?
If there was an official Survivor dictionary, this person's picture would be plastered nice and big on the page for being swap screwed. So I'm taking us to Aaron from Survivor China.
Yeah.
This has got to be like, it just, this situation literally just keeps getting worse and worse, like as the episode goes on. Like they get this clue that, or this parchment that they have to pick two tribe members from the other tribe that they would like to have on their tribe. And just right out of the gate, the yellow tribe is like, oh, we want James and Aaron because James could help us win challenges. Because prior to that, the red tribe was winning all of the challenges. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, we could just take Aaron just to vote him out as an easy vote. And then we wouldn't have to, you know, get rid of any of our own if we do happen to lose, even though we just picked like two of the strongest guys. Yeah. And then what do they do as the episode moves on? We get to one of the most obvious challenge throws in Survivor history when you have Jamie and PG intentionally throwing the challenge just to get rid of Aaron. Like, it literally just keeps getting worse and worse for this guy and easily one of the most screwed people ever when it comes to tribe swaps.
I think the thing that makes this one feel a lot worse than some of these other tribe swaps where they're random or even a schoolyard pick, the entire mechanics of this tribe swap seem like they were designed to work this way. And production just didn't realize that, you know, because they were already doing the kidnapping aspect where they would kidnap someone from the other tribe after they won the reward challenge, which was to give the information about the idols. I think production thought they were trying to build like forge bonds so that people would, you know, be able to work with others moving forward in the game. But instead, I can't even blame Jeanhu for what they do in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were talking about easy decisions being the right decision. This is literally the easiest decision you could possibly have. Just choose two people you are absolutely threatened by the most.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily throw a challenge in order to make it so that you can vote them out.
Little did production know they were making a hit list, basically.
And that's what it came down to. And despite the fact, like, the only reason that Jeanhu didn't throw the challenge after this, they weren't intending to, but James was trying to, if you remember correctly, because that was after James found the idol, or was given the mm-hmm. idol by Todd. And it was the eating challenge, and James couldn't throw it because Denise was just so bad at eating the balloon. So it's so interesting, but like, this is literally designed that way. And even McKenna and I talked about the merge episode of China on the Patreon last week. And there's a conversation PG has with James of like, oh, we sacrificed one of our own to keep you. So like, you need to do that, because that is literally how this tribe swap works. You're taking two people. You're automatically taking two people from the opposing tribe, putting them into a minority on a new tribe. And in the case of, and for anyone who doesn't remember, Survivor China had one of the weirdest divisions for starting tribes ever, because production decided we're going to put the strongest and weakest people on one tribe and like the average people on the other tribe. So because of that, James and Aaron were clearly like the two perceived strongest people in the game. So it made a lot of sense for Jeanhu to pick them to come over. And like you said, if they win challenges, great. They keep going on. But if they win challenges, again, you're sacrificing these relationships you've made with people on your tribe who are now in the exact same situation on the other. You are incentivized to throw these challenges, which is why I think this is one of the, again, like you said, this is one of the worst twists in Survivor history. This is definitely the worst swap mechanic we have ever seen. And I think this is why Aaron Riesberger just like still feels like one of the most screwed over players in Survivor history.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that takes us to the end here. Tiana, you're on this list now too. I'm sorry. You are. We don't want you to be on the list, but here you are. That takes us to the end of this episode of The Rewind. Austin, thank you again so much for joining me and filling in for McKenna this week. Everyone, if you made it this far, please like the video, subscribe to the channel. We have, as always, a lot going on. If you didn't watch Will and Blake recap the episode on Wednesday, make sure you go do that. Phil and Will recap the episode yesterday on Digging Deeper. There's House of Villains episode 5 recap was earlier today. We have predictions of power rankings on Monday. Peridium's going to be joining Phil, so that's going to be a good one. Make sure you tune in for that. And, of course, we have so much going on the Patreon. In fact, you can listen to Austin and I discuss episode 8 of Worlds Apart, Keep It Real. That is the episode with this bottle reward. It's got some very interesting comparisons to this episode of 47. I know Worlds Apart isn't the episode people like, or the season people like visiting the most, but it was very interesting seeing the kind of some of the comparisons between this week's episode of 47 and that. So you can head over to the Patreon to hear us talk about that tomorrow. Every season's matter. They're moving on to Panama now already. It's wild, but Blake, big Panama fan, so you will hear him gushing about Panama the entire time. $5 Tuesdays. Phil and I finished all of those horror movies in October, so all of those are there. We have some more fun movies coming up, depending on your definition of fun, I guess. Phil has finished Australian Survivor 2018. He is moving on to my favorite season of Australian Survivor, Australian Survivor 2019, the second chance versus contenders. I really like that season. I think it was really good.
That's a good one.
And that's it. And then make sure you tune in again on Wednesday for the recap, and we'll do it all again. We will see you next week on The Rewind. Everyone have a good night, and we will see you again soon.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.